Hey everybody, Shayna here with a unique episode. This week I had the pleasure of interviewing John Tenzella, who is the president of the IGLTA, which stands for International Gay and Lesbian Travel Association. John shares with us what kind of challenges the LGBTQ community faces when they travel and what the association is doing to help. Listen to find out some of the countries that we think are doing a great job at being inclusive. As always, this podcast is sponsored by Adventure Writers, copywriting for the travel industry. If you need help rewording your website or writing up new pages, go to adventurewriters.agency for help. That's adventure, WRITERS.agency. Now for the show. Well, John, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you. You are the president of, and I'm going to butcher this, so I got to look it up, the IGLTA, which why don't you tell us what that is?
The International LGBTQ Plus Travel Association.
I love that. Now, that has not always been your background. You've done lots of things in your life. How did you get to a position where you came in to be the president of this?
Well, I was living in Washington, D.C., and I was at the time working for the D.C. Convention and Visitors Bureau, and I did corporate meetings, trying to get corporations to have their board meetings or their conventions in Washington. But then I also did LGBT, being the gay in the office, and IGLTA was one of the conferences that was high on the radar to get to the city. And so in the bid process, it went really well, and we did win the bid eventually to bring it to D.C. But I kept in touch with the board, and they would ask me about ideas and things and how they could grow the organization, grow the conference. And then one day they contacted me and asked if I would move to Fort Lauderdale and take the helm. And that's how it happened.
Wow. And that's a big move. You were living in D.C.? That is a big move.
Both, it's a big change.
Both climate and, let's say, personality of the city.
Yeah, and culture and,
Very cool.
Very different cities.
Was travel always a part of your life?
It was, actually. And that was part of what drew me to it, was that I had worked at Delta for 15 years. I grew up in a family with parents that were in the airline industry, so it was in my nature and in my blood to be in tourism and travel and see the world. So it was really exciting to get into this position and with this organization.
Why was travel a part of your life, do you think? Like, what is it about travel that you enjoy?
I think it's just my parents both were very passionate about travel, and they took us all the time to see different places. So it was just something I kind of grew up with as a child. And I think that, when you're a child, you're just so impressionable, and those things you remember when you get older was something that was very passionate to me. So it's awesome.
So what is a memory you have of traveling as a child? Like, just name a place that you guys went and a memory you have from there.
Actually, Fort Lauderdale was one. Interestingly, when I was in elementary school, actually in Boston, my mom came into the bedroom and told me and my brothers that they had a surprise for us. We weren't going to school that day. We were taking the day off, but we needed to pack our bags. And we went to Fort Lauderdale for a long weekend, which was really cool.
That is so cool.
Yeah, my father was with the airline, so we were able to do things like that kind of spontaneously.
What did he do with the airline?
He was in flight control, so he would talk to the pilots. Once they left the range of the control towers, he would talk to them through the flight for, altitude, turbulence, storms, other aircraft, emergencies, et cetera, during their flights.
That makes me feel so good. Little known fact, I hate flying. Absolutely hate flying, which is ironic.
I love it.
Because I have a travel podcast and a travel company.
Yes,
and I love traveling. I just, there's something about this actual flight. Gigantic, huge airplane being held up by air that I just cannot wrap my brain around. And so that does make me feel better that there's people talking these pilots through it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And so you said that you also worked for Delta. What did you do with them?
I did, yeah. I started in reservations in Atlanta, and then I moved to Cincinnati and got a permanent position up there and was working in a temporary assignment in the marketing office. And then, you know, through the hiring internally, I got promoted to a marketing sales office position in Atlanta back in the headquarters. And then I eventually went to a international business development job. That was my last position there, but I worked there 15 years.
And
it was cool because I got to see a lot of places in that role.
Oh, I imagine. And it sounds like you've lived kind of all over the East.
Yes, never the West. Never the West.
Never made it to this part? You need to do it.
I'm
sure you've, yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure you've traveled here.
Oh, yeah. I love Portland and Seattle and the whole West Coast, but it's it's a nice part of the country out there, particularly the Pacific Northwest. It's really living a great place, as you know.
Yes, I do. Of course, on rainy days like today, when I'm sure you're sitting in sunny Florida, you probably don't miss. Yep, thanks for that shot.
Just throwing it out there.
Thanks a lot. So let's talk about the IGLTA. Did I get that right?
You did, yes.
I've been practicing it. So many acronyms, so hard.
I know. In our industry, there's way too many.
What is the purpose of the IGLTA?
Well, we do work basically to help promote our members that are LGBTQ+ welcoming to travelers, to the ultimate end user. So we're navigating throughout the world, working with, like we were talking about, airlines, but also hotels, tourism boards, travel writers, travel agents and tour operators, cruise lines, you name it. We work with anyone in the industry that's looking to reach LGBTQ travelers. And we're based in Fort Lauderdale, but we do have staff in 7 countries, and we have member businesses in 82 countries, or just over 80 countries.
Wow. That's a wide reach.
Global footprint.
Yeah. So talk to me about maybe some of the challenges that an LGBTQIA person might encounter when it comes to travel.
It's varied. And of course, it depends to where you're from and where you're traveling to. So there's a lot of different scenarios in there. But basically, the community is looking for safe and welcoming experiences when they travel, right? So those are very basic, but critically important. Where you're located, of course, is a very welcoming area of the world, but certainly not everywhere is like that. But that doesn't mean necessarily that people in our community are not going to travel to those places. They still want to go. Many won't be told that they can't go to a particular place because they're in the LGBTQ community. But then others will not go if they're not welcome. So there's a spectrum of will within the community.
Have you found that most countries and places that you reach out to are welcoming, or are you still hitting roadblocks when you're talking with people, even in 2019?
Oh yeah, definitely. Even within our own country, there's situations and now there's a lot, you know, through the administration on the transgender community. So even here in the United States, we're facing some challenges. So it's a wide variety of acceptance throughout the globe.
And does the IGLTA, what did they do to help with that? Are you advocating at different government meetings? Like, what are you doing to help?
We don't do lobbying per se, but we do advocate in that perspective. And we do work with allies within the tourism industry, other organizations or associations, and lending our name to causes that affect LGBTQ+ travelers. But we do also work with or meet with government officials around the world in our travels and conferences. I actually met with leaders from Uganda, from their government and from their tourism department at the United Nations in, this was several years ago, maybe 4 years ago in New York, about LGBTQ travel. This was back when there was a lot of Uganda going on and they were getting really hit from tourism. So they were wanting to reach out to us to say, well, LGBTQ plus people are welcome in our country, so everyone needs to come to Uganda. And I'm like, well, that's not necessarily what we're hearing, but you know, they would say, well, it's Western media is sensationalizing it, but we knew better than that being the sole solution or sole reason. So it was interesting, you know, to hear their perspective on our community. Now, there are certainly people in our community that go to Uganda because they want to see the gorilla safaris. So we do work in Uganda. We do have members in Uganda that will provide a welcoming, safe experience for those in the community that want to go there. And we certainly have had many. We actually brought in at our convention last year in Toronto, a small business owner in Uganda that's gay and brings in LGBTQ plus travelers to safaris in Uganda. And so that was a real treat to hear his perspectives on Uganda and what he does with clients and who he works with in their country that, you know, to ensure that people do have a safe experience there.
Well, and especially since he's a member of the community,
right?
Exactly. He has a vested interest in making sure that, like you said, that it is safe, not only for his customers, but for himself.
Exactly. Like he knows who to, you know, who he can work with, who he can trust, being on the ground there and part of the community. But it is, it's a challenging destination for sure, but one that's supposedly fascinating on safaris.
It's always fascinating for me to talk to people from different communities. I'm not part of the LGBTQ community, but however, I certainly am an ally. But it brings up scenarios it brings up scenarios that I just would never have even thought of. Like when I'm thinking of going on a safari, I'm not thinking, is this going to be safe for me because of my sexual orientation or my gender or whatever? Like that's just not even something I think, you know, is a gorilla going to eat me? Like that's my biggest concern. I'm not concerned about the people that are working
with me. That's the priority, right? Yeah.
No,
that's the secondary.
Right? First it's the people and then the animals.
Yeah, first the people, then the gorillas, yeah.
But I imagine that a lot of what your organization does is empowers people through information, right? Just even disseminating the information out there and showing people, you know, people that you can trust, or even just shedding a light on the issue. Even for me right now, shedding a light on the issue that there are people who have to think about these things helps improve the situation.
Exactly. Disseminating information is huge because that is what enables people to make an educated decision on where to go and who to do business with.
Well, and I have a lot of business, adventure travel business owners who listen to this podcast, and I'm sure they're even thinking, wow, maybe I haven't thought about this particular group and what can I do to be more welcoming to them. So I think that's great. Let's talk about...
Yeah, and there's certainly a big segment in our community for adventure travel.
Right. Let's talk about the conference specifically. You have a conference coming up in April in New York, which is ironic because you were on the board in Washington, D.C. trying to get them to go there. But I see that you have gone rogue and gone to New York.
That was a while ago, though.
Why don't you talk about that conference and what happens and who it's for, stuff like that.
Well, and it's interesting because this will be our 36th annual convention, and it's never been held in New York.
Sorry, I'm saying the wrong word. Convention.
What did you say?
I said conference. It's kind of the same thing.
Kind of the same thing, yeah. But yes, you know, New York is such a hub for tourism, and the people who attend our conference are in tourism. So it is weird we've never had one there. So we're really excited to be bringing it to New York. And the Tourism Office of New York has been just amazing to work with. But the attendees tend to be from all over the world. They are just like I was talking about before, our members. So it's anyone in the tourism industry that's interested in the LGBTQ plus community and the traveler. So whether they're in our community or not, it's a mixture, but they're interested in either learning more about this travel segment, or they're already engaged and they're making contacts, or both. But it's a great conference with speakers and breakout sessions, great networking events in the evenings. And we also do a foundation fundraiser event that includes a dinner, and we'll be doing that on one of the piers in New York that helps raise money for small LGBT travel business owners around the globe and places where it's either illegal or difficult to be gay. So it's, but it's a great conference. It's a lot of fun, a lot of great networking. We're hoping for 600 attendees from about 50 countries. Certainly any of your businesses that are listening are welcome to take a look at our website and register to come. We'd love to have them. More adventure tourism professionals is certainly welcome.
That's awesome. And so do you find that it's mostly business owners, or are just individual people who are interested in travel coming to this convention as well?
Individual meaning just general consumers?
Just general consumer. Yep.
No, it's definitely a B2B conference. So it's not open to the public per se. So it would be people that are either own or work in a tourism field, whether they're at the Marriott in Istanbul, or they're running at safaris in South Africa, or where, whatever, but somebody in the business of tourism.
Very cool. And I, in the show notes, I will put a link to your website so that any of you are interested, keep in mind that this is happening end of April, right? April 20-something?
24th through the 27th, and it will be at the Midtown New York Hilton.
So by the time you are listening to this podcast, hurry and jump on that website and grab your ticket before it's too late.
Exactly. Before it sells out.
So let's talk about some positive stories. What countries, and you can name a couple of them, are just fabulous to work with the LGBTQ plus community?
I would say right near the top would be our neighbors to the north, Canada.
Really? They're doing a better job than we are?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so these days, yes.
Very cool. What about in Europe? What countries are good in Europe that are really just on top of it?
Quite a few. I mean, the European Union has really, you know, mandated that as part of their being is equality for all citizens. So, you know, typically like Northern Europe tends to lead the way, the Scandinavian countries in particular, but Britain, of course, as well, Germany. They're all quite progressive on LGBTQ issues.
What
about South Africa? Is constitutionally is a great country for our community.
Very
cool. I mean,
cool.
They have their challenges in rural areas, just like we do. But constitutionally, they were the first. So I'll give a shout out to South Africa.
Well, and you bring up a good point that just because, like you said, constitutionally or in the government mandates,
exactly,
that a place is open doesn't necessarily mean that the attitudes of the culture are that way.
Right. Exactly.
And I imagine that is one of the struggles that people in the community deal with, is thinking that they're going somewhere where they're going to be safe. And perhaps legally they're safe, but there's a big difference between being safe and feeling welcomed.
Right. And being treated fairly and nicely and welcoming.
Right.
I mean, you could certainly say that happens here in the States as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Even in progressive places like Portland, I'm sure there's still people who are not being kind. I don't know any of them. If I did, I would tell them to stop it.
Yes, I would too.
But I'm sure it's happening all over the place. Let's talk a second about maybe some of the harder places that you've run into, or places that you just don't suggest people in the community go to right now.
Well, we actually never tell anyone not to go somewhere. Just because, one, they're not going to listen to us, and two, it really doesn't help the community in that destination. So, you know, we get asked a lot about boycotting places like Egypt or Jamaica, for example. But there are, you know, a lot of businesses and citizens that rely on tourism that are, and they're part of our community. So it doesn't really help by doing a boycott. It's just not part of our DNA to say that. We prefer to work with a destination, work with businesses, you know, build bridges slowly but surely, rather than saying, you know, don't go to this place. I mean, there's plenty of organizations in our community that will say, don't go to Jamaica. And this is the reason why, but that doesn't help the community in Jamaica if you boycott it or say, you know, tell people not to go. So we just feel a little differently than that.
So I think that's great.
We say see the world, you know?
Right. And don't put limits on yourself. Maybe just be educated and know what you're getting yourself into and then make that individual decision.
Exactly. And that really applies for all travelers. It doesn't have to be part of the LGBTQ community. You have to be mindful of the laws and the cultures. Let's say you're going to the Middle East. I mean, there's certainly challenges there for females traveling there from the West. So it really is knowing the laws and the culture where you're going, whether you're, you know, straight or not.
And knowing the risks and what you're willing to risk.
Right, exactly.
So I'm going to sound incredibly ignorant when I ask this, but what's going on in Jamaica? I didn't know Jamaica was a hard place to go to.
It can be challenging, you know, for the community there.
Is that a government thing, like the laws, or is that a cultural
it's
thing?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Is it against the law?
Part, yeah.
It
yeah,
is? Exactly.
Yeah.
In Jamaica?
Yeah, it's a very, you know, they claim it's religious and same-sex couples are not welcome and things like that. I mean, they certainly have a community there. And we have people there that we do send business to, but it's such a huge tourism destination too. A gay boycott's not going to make a hill of beans if people didn't go because they're it's a huge destination for tourism. So it's, you know, our approach is, I think, smarter to work with the destination and slowly break down those barriers. And us and other organizations have been doing that. And things seem like they're kind of going in the right direction. You know, Bermuda was that way. I don't know if you've heard about Bermuda, where they didn't allow same-sex weddings and laws and stuff. But through a lot of pressure, both in Bermuda and outside Bermuda, from Carnival Cruise Line to us to others, pressuring them, they did reinstate, or they instated the same-sex weddings and rights for same-sex couples and LGBTQ people. But it's about a 2-year struggle, which is pretty quick, actually, in the bigger scheme of things for a lot of places. But we do a lot of work with them.
I'm feeling like a terrible ally. I don't know any of these things. I think
those are also very far from you.
Well, geographically, yes. And I think it's just one of those things where, you know, if something doesn't directly affect you, oftentimes
you don't know about it.
You just don't know about it. Or when you see it in your news feeds or whatever, it's just, it doesn't grab your attention because it doesn't directly affect you, which I think is why things like this podcast are important, to open up the issue and just make people aware. And I think 2 years is actually pretty quick when you think about
the big government picture, and
culture and the big picture. And I think that was good job. High five, clap for that is what I have to say.
Amen.
Let's talk about the IGLTA and allies for a minute. What are things that allies can be doing to help?
Well, from our perspective, being in the tourism industry, our allies are mainstream tourism companies that, you know, support the community, support us as a global organization. And we have some great ones that, like, at our top tier level, we have Delta Airlines, Disney, Marriott, and Hilton. Those are four really respected corporations that do business globally. So they're really great supporters. They involve us in things both internally with their employee resource groups, the LGBT employee resource groups, as well as externally, including us in on maybe something that they're doing fighting a measure in a particular destination that they're doing business in. We're helping, you know, bring us to the table. So we sort of support each other.
And sadly, money does talk. And
it
so when you have a large corporation like this that's willing to back you up and willing to, you know, put their voice out there, governments and industries listen.
Yep, absolutely.
So I just think that's great.
They provide jobs in the community, and yeah, they could do business anywhere. So, you know, governments do need to do listen, I believe.
Very cool. I have had my eyes opened even a little bit more in this interview. I really appreciate you doing this and just talking about maybe
something. Oh, you're very welcome.
That allies don't think about. One thing I did want to talk about is transgender issues, because I think even in my limited knowledge, it feels like that's the new frontier. That even when places are accepting,
being attacked. Yeah.
That even when places are accepting of gay and lesbian issues, that breaking into the transgender issues is a whole nother ballgame. Do you feel like that I'm correct in stating that?
Yeah, I'd say so, particularly in the States here where it has become, the new, I forget the term, where you're punching bag, you know, under the Trump administration to attack transgender citizens in the military and in the communities that they live, that never seemed to be an issue. So it's disappointing, you know, that our country is doing, our leader is doing this, but it does seem to be like the new frontier of having to fight for the rights more so than other countries.
I was going to say, are you seeing that in other countries as well, or not really?
Not really. Not like we're seeing it here. Not of recent. And in some places, like in Southeast Asia, it's certainly very welcomed and something that's done. Not, you know, it's not shunned. It's very much more common, say, in like Thailand, places like that that do the surgeries and things. But yeah, it just seems to be something front and center in the U.S., but you're not hearing about it so much in other parts of the world.
Right.
It's disappointing for sure.
Definitely. Well, I wish you luck in that fight and for all of
your allies
and everyone who's helping with that. I like to end these podcasts with two questions. I don't know if you're aware of that. I don't remember if I told you this.
No, you didn't tell me, but go ahead.
Well,
I'll try.
Surprise. Here's two questions for you. The first one is, where's your favorite place to travel? Just your absolute favorite place. So yes, it's a hard one, but also easy because you can pretty much pick anywhere. Everywhere is great.
Well, that's the thing. Everywhere is great.
And then the second question is, what piece of advice do you have for our listeners? And that could be related to the IGLTA, or it could just be related to travel in general. So you pick.
Okay, well, I tend to always pinpoint if I say my favorite, even though I love so many destinations, but here in the States, Provincetown, Massachusetts, is a beautiful hamlet to go to. Great theater, great dining, very unique and non-commercial. Somewhere I'd love to go every summer. Internationally, probably one of my very favorite places I've been a few times is South Africa. Part of the same reasons, that the dining is amazing, the lifestyle is amazing, the people are wonderful, the safaris are absolutely incredible, and the topography is stunning, the weather is stunning. So those would probably be my two, one for domestic, one for international. And the other part of the other question you said was,
what piece of advice do you have for the listeners?
Oh, well, if they're travelers just listening to this, you know, be sure to check out our website for options around the globe when you're traveling to, you know, support those that are interested in supporting you, IGLTA.org. But then if you're running a business, whether it's adventure travel or other, please consider coming to our convention. And I think you'll find it to be a really great conference, as well as great networking and business with like tools.
Very cool. Thank you, John, for coming on the podcast.
No, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
Hey, Shayna here. Wasn't that great? This is going to be so cheesy, but I can't help but think of the lyrics to the classic Depeche Mode song. People are people, so why should it be? You and I should get along so awfully. You're singing that in your head now, aren't you? Be kind and enjoy this beautiful world. Until next time, bye-bye.